Chapter 54. The shocking knowledge struck Pitt like the thrust of a dagger. He stared through a large picture window at the helicopter sitting on the yacht moored to the pier in the lagoon. He estimated the distance at just under a kilometer. Burdened by two young children, he figured they would need a good 15 minutes to reach the dock. Without means of transportation, a car or a truck, it would be an extremely close timetable. The time for caution had flown as if there had never been such a time. Giordino and Maeve should have found her sons by now. They had to have found them. If not, something must have gone terribly wrong. He turned his gaze first toward Mount Winkleman, and then swept the saddle of the island, his eyes stopping on Mount Skaggs. They looked deceptively peaceful. Seeing the lush growth of trees in the ravines scoring the slopes, he found it hard to imagine the two mounts as menacing volcanoes, sleeping giants on the verge of spewing death and disaster in a burst of gaseous steam and molten rock. Briskly, but not in a hurried panic, he rose out of Dorset's leather executive chair and came around the desk. At that instant he halted abruptly, frozen in the exact center of the room as the double doors to the main interior of the house swung open and Arthur Dorset walked in. He was carrying a cup of coffee in one hand and a file of papers under an arm. He wore wrinkled slacks and what had once been white but was now a yellowed dress shirt with a bow tie. His mind seemed elsewhere. Perceiving another body in his study, he looked up, more curious than surprised. Seeing the intruder was in uniform, his first thought was that Pitt was a security guard. He opened his mouth to demand the reason for Pitt's presence, then stiffened in petrified astonishment. His face became a pale mask molded by shock and bewilderment. The file fell to the floor, its papers sliding out like a fanned deck of cards. His hand dropped to his side, spilling the coffee on his slacks and the carpet.
"You're dead," he gasped.
"You don't know how happy I am to prove you wrong," Pitt commented, pleased to see that Dorset wore a patch over one eye. "Come to think of it, you do look like you've seen a ghost."
"The storm! There is no way you could have survived a raging sea."
A flicker of emotional repossession showed in the one black eye and slowly but surely grew.
"How was it possible?"
"A lot of positive thinking and my Swiss Army knife." My God, this guy is big, Pitt thought, very glad he was the one pointing a gun.
"And Maeve, is she dead?"
He spoke haltingly as he studied the assault rifle in Pitt's hands, the muzzle aimed at his heart. "Just knowing that it causes you great annoyance and displeasure makes me happy to report she is alive and well, and at this very moment about to make off with your grandsons." Pitt stared back, green eyes locked with black. "Tell me, Dorset, how do you justify murdering your own daughter? Did one single woman who was simply trying to find herself as a person pose a threat to your assets? Or was it her sons you wanted, all to yourself?"
"It was essential the empire be carried on after my death by my direct descendants. Maeve refused to see it that way."
"I have news for you. Your empire is about to come crashing down around your head." Dorset failed to grasp Pitt's meaning.
"You intend to kill me?"
Pitt shook his head. "I'm not your executioner. The island volcanoes are going to erupt. A fitting end for you, Arthur, consumed by fiery lava." Dorset smiled faintly as he regained control.
"What sort of nonsense is that?"
"Too complicated to explain. I don't know all the technicalities myself, but I have it on the best authority. You'll just have to take my word for it."
"You're bloody insane."
"O ye of little faith."
"If you're going to shoot," said Dorset, cold anger glaring from his coal-black eye, "do it now, clean and quick."
Pitt grinned impassively. Maeve and Giordino had yet to make an appearance. For the moment, he needed Arthur Dorset alive in case they had been captured by security guards. "Sorry, I haven't the time. Now please turn around and go up the stairs to the bedrooms."
"My grandchildren! You can't have my grandchildren," he muttered as if it was a divine statement.
"Correction, Maeve's children."
"You'll never get past my security guards."
"The two at the front gate are, what's the word? Incapacitated."
Then you'll have to murder me in cold blood, and I'll wager everything I've got that you don't have the guts for it.
Why is it people keep thinking I can't stand the sight of blood?
Pitt touched his finger against the trigger of the assault rifle.
Get moving, Arthur, or I'll shoot off your ears.
Go ahead, you yellow bastard, Dorset lashed out. You already took one of my eyes.
You don't get the picture, do you? White-hot anger consumed Pitt at seeing Dorset's arrogant belligerence. He raised the rifle slightly and gently squeezed the trigger. The gun spat with a loud pop through the suppressor, and a slice of Dorset's left ear sprayed the carpet. Now head for the stairs. Make a move I don't like, and you'll get a bullet in the spine.
There was no hint of pain in the bestial black eye. Dorset smiled a menacing smile that sent an involuntary shiver through Pitt. Then slowly, he put a hand to his shattered ear and turned toward the door. At that instant, Boudicca walked into the study, majestically straight and handsomely proportioned in a form-fitting silk robe that stopped several centimeters above her knees. Not recognizing Pitt in the guard's uniform, and not realizing her father was in immediate danger.
"What is it, Daddy? I thought I heard a gunshot."
Then she noticed the blood seeping through fingers pressed against his head.
"You're hurt."
"We have unwelcome visitors, daughter," said Dorset. Almost as if he had eyes in the back of his head, he knew that Pitt's attention was focused briefly on Boudicca. Unwittingly, she didn't fail him. As she rushed toward him to assess the damage, she caught sight of Pitt's face out of the corner of one eye. For an instant, her face reflected confusion. Then, abruptly, her eyes widened in recognition.
"No. No, it's not possible."
It was the distraction Dorset had prepared for. In a violent, twisting motion, he whirled around, one arm striking the gun barrel and knocking it aside. Pitt instinctively pulled the trigger. A spray of bullets blasted into a painting of Charles Dorset over a fireplace mantel. Physically weakened and dead on his feet from lack of sleep, Pitt's reaction time was a fraction longer than it should have been. The strain and exhaustion of the past 3 weeks had taken their toll. He watched in what seemed slow motion as the assault rifle was torn from his hands and sent flying across the room before smashing through a window. Dorset was on Pitt like a maddened rhino. Pitt clutched him, struggling to stay on his feet. But the heavier man was swinging his huge fists like pile drivers, his thumbs gouging at Pitt's eyes. Pitt twisted his head and kept his eyes in their sockets, but a fist caught him on the side of the head above one ear. Fireworks burst inside his brain, and he was swept by a wave of dizziness. Desperately, Pitt crouched and rolled to his side to escape the rain of blows. He jumped in the opposite direction as Dorset lunged at him. The old diamond miner had sent many a man to the hospital with only his bare hands, backed by arms and shoulders thick with muscle. During his rough-and-tumble youth in the mines, he had prided himself on never having to resort to knives and guns. His bulk and power were all he required to put away anyone with the nerve to stand up to him. Even at an age when most men turned to flab, Dorset retained a body as hard as granite. Pitt shook his head to clear his sight. He felt like a battered prize-fighter, desperately holding on to the ropes until the bell for the end of the round, struggling to bring his mind back on track. Few were the martial arts experts who could put down Dorset's irresistible mass of sheer muscle. Pitt was beginning to think the only thing that would slow the diamond merchant was an elephant gun. If only Giordino would charge over the hill. At least he had a 9mm automatic. Pitt's mind raced on, adding up viable moves, dismissing the ones certain to end with broken bones. He dodged around the desk, stalling for time, facing Dorset and forcing a smile that made his face ache. Pitt had learned long ago, after numerous barroom fights and riots, that hands and feet were no match against chairs, beer mugs, and whatever else was handy to crack skulls. He glanced around for the nearest weapon.
"What now, old man? Are you going to bite me with your rotting teeth?"
The insult had the desired effect. Dorset roared insanely and lashed out with a foot at Pitt's groin. His timing was off by a fractional instant, and his heel only grazed Pitt's hip. Then he leaped across the desk. Pitt calmly took one step back, snatched up a metal desk lamp, and swung it with strength renewed by wrath and hatred. Dorset tried to lift an arm to ward off the blow, but he was a fraction slow. The lamp caught him on the wrist, snapping it before hurtling on against the shoulder and breaking the collarbone with a sharp crack. He bellowed like a stricken animal and came after Pitt again with a look of black malevolence heightened by pain and pure savagery. He threw a vicious punch at Pitt's head. Pitt ducked and jammed the base of the lamp downward. It connected somewhere below Dorset's knee on the shin, but the momentum of the flying leg knocked the lamp from Pitt's hand. There was a clunk on the carpet. Now Dorset was coming back at him almost as if he were completely uninjured. The veins were throbbing on the sides of his neck. The eye blazed, and there were dribbles of saliva at the ends of his cracked, gasping mouth. He actually seemed to be laughing. He had to be mad. He mumbled something incoherent and leaped toward Pitt. Dorset never reached his victim. His right leg collapsed, and he crashed to the floor on his back. Pitt's swing of the lamp base had broken his shin bone. This time Pitt reacted like a cat. With a lightning move, he sprang onto the desk, tensed, and jumped. Together, Pitt's feet hurtled downward, ramming soles and heels into Dorset's exposed neck. The malignant face, single eye gleaming black, yellowed teeth bared, seemed to stretch in shock. A huge hand groped the empty air. Arms and legs lashed out blindly. An agonized animal sound burst from his throat, a horrible gurgling sound that came through his crushed windpipe. Then Dorset's body collapsed as all life faded away, and the sadistic light in his eye blinked out. Pitt somehow managed to remain standing, panting through clenched teeth. He stared at Boudicca, who strangely had made no move to help her father. She looked down at the dead body on the carpet with the uncaring but fascinated expression of a witness at a fatal traffic accident.
"You killed him," she said finally in a normal tone of voice.
"Few men deserve to die more," Pitt said, catching his breath while massaging a growing knot on his head. Boudicca turned her attention away from her dead father as though he didn't exist.
"I should thank you, Mr. Pitt, for handing me Dorset Consolidated Mining Limited on a silver platter."
"I'm touched by your sorrow," she smiled boredly.
"You did me a favor."
"To the adoring daughter go the spoils. What about Maeve and Deirdre? They're each entitled to a third of the business."
"Deirdre will receive her share," Boudicca said matter-of-factly. "Maeve, if she is still alive, will get nothing. Daddy had already cut her out of the business."
"And the twins?"
She shrugged.
"Little boys have accidents every day."
"I guess it isn't in you to be a loving aunt."
Pitt went taut from the bleak prospects. In a few minutes the eruption would occur. He wondered whether he had the strength left to fight another Dorset. He remembered his surprise when Boudicca had lifted and crushed his body against the wall on her yacht at Kunghit Island. His biceps still ached from the memory of her grip. According to Sandecker, the acoustic wave would strike the island in minutes, followed by the eruption of the volcanoes. If he had to die, he might as well go out fighting. Somehow, being beaten to pulp by a woman didn't seem as frightening as being cremated by molten lava. What of Maeve and her boys? He could not bring himself to believe harm had come to them, not with Giordino present. They had to be warned of the coming cataclysm if there was still any chance they could escape the island alive. Deep inside him, he knew he was no match for Boudicca, but he had to act while he had the slight advantage of surprise. The thought was still in his mind when he sprinted forward, head down, across the room, crashing shoulder first into Boudicca's stomach. Boudicca was caught off guard, but it made little difference, almost no difference at all. She took the full force of the blow, grunted from the sudden shock, and although she reeled back a few steps, she remained standing. Before Pitt could recover his own balance, she clutched him with both arms under his chest, swung around in a half-circle and threw him against a bookcase, his back shattering the glass doors. Incredibly, he managed somehow to remain erect on wobbly legs instead of crashing to the floor. Pitt gasped in agony. His whole body felt like every bone was broken. He fought off the pain and charged again, catching Boudicca with a bruising uppercut with his fist that drew blood. It was a blow that should have knocked any woman unconscious for a week, but Boudicca simply wiped away the blood streaming from her mouth with the back of one hand and smiled horribly. She doubled her fists and moved toward Pitt, crouched in a boxer's stance. Hardly correct posture for a lady, Pitt thought. He stepped in, ducked under a savage right-hand slash, and hit her again with the last of his remaining strength. He felt his fist drive home against flesh and bone, and then he was pounded by a tremendous blow that caught him in the chest. Pitt thought his heart had been mashed to pulp. He couldn't believe any woman could hit so hard. He had hammered her with a punch that had more than enough momentum to break her jaw, yet she still smiled through a bleeding mouth and repaid him with a driving backhand that drove him into the stone fireplace, forcing all the breath out of his lungs. He fell and lay there grotesquely for several moments, engulfed in pain. As though in a fog, he pushed himself to his knees, then came to his feet and stood swaying, gathering himself for one final move. Boudicca stepped in and brutally caught Pitt in the rib cage with her elbow. He could hear the sharp snap of one, maybe two ribs cracking, and felt the stabbing pain in his chest as he crumpled to his hands and knees. He stared dumbly at the design in the carpet and wanted to hold onto the floor forever. Perhaps he was dead, and this was all there was to it. A floral design and a carpet. Despairingly, he realized he could go no further. He groped for the fireplace poker, but his vision was too blurred and his movements too uncoordinated for him to find and grasp it in his hands. Vaguely, he saw Boudicca lean down, take him by one leg, and hurl him crazily across the floor, where he collided with the open door. Then she walked over and picked him up by the collar with one hand and smashed him a hard blow in the head just above the eye. Pitt lay there, teetering on the edge of unconsciousness, swimming in pain, sensing but not really feeling the blood flowing from a gash above his left eye. Like a cat toying with a mouse, Boudicca would soon tire of the game and kill him. Dazedly, almost miraculously, drawing on a strength he didn't know he possessed, Pitt somehow struggled slowly to his feet for what he was certain would be the last time. Boudicca stood there beside the body of her father, smirking with anticipation. Complete mastery was etched in her face.
"Time for you to join my father," she said.
Her tone was deep, icy, and compelling.
"There's a nauseating thought for you."
Pitt's voice came thick and slurred. Then Pitt saw the malice slowly fade in Boudicca's face and felt a hand gently ease him aside as Giordino entered the Dorset family study. He stared at Boudicca contemptuously and said, "This fancy maggot is mine." At that moment Maeve appeared in the doorway, clutching a pair of blonde-haired little boys by the hands, one on either side of her. She looked from Pitt's bleeding face to Boudicca, to her father's body on the floor.
"What happened to Daddy?"
"He caught a sore throat," muttered Pitt. "Sorry I'm late," said Giordino calmly. "A couple of servants proved overly protective. They locked themselves in a room with the boys. It took me a while to kick in the door." He didn't explain what he did with the servants. He handed Pitt the 9mm automatic taken from John Merchant. "If she wins, shoot her."
"With pleasure," Pitt said, his eyes devoid of sympathy.
Gone was any display of confidence in Boudicca's eyes. Gone, too, was any anticipation of merely hurting her opponent. This time she was fighting for her life, and she was going to use every dirty street-fighting trick she'd been taught by her father. This was to be no civilized boxing or karate match. She moved wolf-like to position herself to deliver a killing blow, mindful of the gun in Pitt's hand.
"So you came back from the dead, too," she hissed.
"You never left my dreams," Giordino said, puckering his lips and sending her a kiss.
"A pity you survived only to die in my house."
A mistake. Boudicca wasted the half-second with unnecessary talk. Giordino was on her like a cattle stampede, legs bent, feet extending as they came in contact with Boudicca's chest. The impact doubled her over with a gasp of agony, but incredibly she somehow retained her stance and clamped her hands around Giordino's wrists. She hurled herself backward over the desk, pulling him with her until she was lying back against the floor, with Giordino face down on the desktop above her, seemingly defenseless with his arms stretched out and locked in front of him. Boudicca looked up into Giordino's face. The evil grin came back on her lips as she held her victim helpless in a steel grip. She increased the pressure and bent his wrists with the intention of breaking them with her Amazon strength. It was a shrewd move. She could render Giordino disabled while shielding herself with his body until she could retrieve a revolver Arthur Dorset kept loaded inside a bottom desk drawer. Pitt, waiting for a signal from his friend to shoot, could not line up the automatic on Boudicca under the desk. Barely conscious, it was all he could do to keep from collapsing, his vision still unfocused from the blow to the forehead. Maeve was huddling against him now, her arms clasped around her son's, shielding their eyes from the brutal scene. Giordino seemed to lie there immobile, as if accepting defeat without fighting back, while Boudicca kept bending his wrists slowly backward. Her silk robe had fallen away from her shoulders, and Maeve, who stared in awe at those massive shoulders and bulging muscles, having never seen her older sister unclothed, was stunned at the sight. Then her gaze drifted to the body of her father sprawled on the carpet. There was no sadness in her eyes, only shock at his unexpected death. Then, slowly, as if he'd been conserving his strength, Giordino pulled his wrists and hands upward as if curling a set of weights. Incomprehension followed on the heels of shock in Boudicca's face. Then came disbelief, and her body quivered as she exerted every trace of strength to stop the relentless force. Suddenly she could grip his wrists no more, and her hold was broken. She immediately went for Giordino's eyes, but he had expected the move and brushed her hands aside. Before Boudicca could recover, Giordino was across the desk and falling on her chest, his legs straddling her body, pressing her arms to the floor. Held immobile by strength she had never expected, Boudicca thrashed in frantic madness to escape. Desperately, she tried to reach the desk drawer containing the revolver, but Giordino's knees kept her arms effectively pinned against her sides. Giordino flexed his arm muscles, and then his hands were around her throat. "Like father, like daughter," he snarled. "Join him in hell." Boudicca realized with sickening certainty that there would be no release, no mercy. She was effectively imprisoned. Her body convulsed in terror as Giordino's massive hand squeezed the life from her. She tried to scream, but only uttered a squawking cry. The crushing grip never relaxed as her face contorted, the eyes bulged, and the skin began turning blue. Normally warm with a humorous smile, Giordino's face remained expressionless as he squeezed ever more tightly. The agonized drama lasted until Boudicca's body jerked and stiffened. The strength drained out of her, and she went limp. Without slackening his hold around her throat, Giordino pulled the giant woman off the floor and draped her body across the top of the desk. Maeve watched in morbid fascination and shock as Giordino tore the silk robe from Boudicca's body. Then she screamed and turned away, sickened at the sight. "You called it, partner," said Pitt, his thoughts struggling to adjust fully to what he beheld. Giordino made a slight tilt of his head, his eyes cold and remote. "I knew the minute she socked me in the jaw on the yacht. We've got to leave. The whole island is about to go up in smoke and cinders." "Come again?" Giordino asked dumbly. "I'll draw you a picture later." Pitt looked at Maeve. "What have you got for transportation around the house?"
"A garage on the side of the house holds a pair of mini-cars Daddy uses, used for driving between the mines."
Pitt swept one of the boys up in his arms. "Which one are you?" Frightened of the blood streaming down Pitt's face, the youngster mumbled, "Michael." He pointed to his brother, who was now held by Giordino.
"He's Sean."
"Ever flown in a helicopter, Michael?"
"No, but I always wanted to."
"Wishing will make it so," Pitt laughed. As Maeve hurried from the study, she turned and took one last look at her father and Boudicca, whom she always thought of as her sister, an older sibling who remained distant and seldom displayed anything but animosity, but a sister nonetheless. Her father had kept the secret well, enduring the shame and hiding it from the world. It sickened her to discover, after all these years, that Boudicca was a man.